to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you broadcasts from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, we continue stories we've been following. Later on, parts 5 and 6 of the 13-part series Frankenstein. But first, part 5 of 13 of James Fenimore Cooper's story, The Deerslayer, part of his Leatherstocking Tales series. This first broadcast in 1932.
You are about to hear another episode of The Deerslayer, dramatized and directed by Charles Frederick Blindsley.
In the middle of the lake to find the two canoes which were lost in the night. They have found one which drifted close to the shore, but in rescuing it, Deerslayer has his first encounter with the enemy and is forced to shoot an adversary in self-defense. He and Judith have taken to the water again in search of the second canoe.
I didn't want to take his life, Judith, but I had to, or he would have taken mine.
You should be very proud, Deerslayer. It was a very accurate shot you made. You didn't even have time to aim. I can see why men brag about your rifle shooting.
I don't wish to boast about the exploit. It was slaying a human, although he was a savage.
Is this the first warrior you've ever killed?
Yes. I have fought with most of the creatures of the forest, such as bears, wolves, and catamounts. But this is the beginning with the redskins.
Why didn't you take the scalp? That's always done, I'm told.
No hand of mine will ever molest a scalp. If I was an Indian, I might, and then brag about it. But I'm white, and my vouchers are white.
All white men don't think that way.
Oh, yes, I know. But then there are miscreants of every color. And evil practices by a few will not make an act right. Keep your eyes open, Judith, for the other canoe. We'll turn this one loose. The wind is blowing toward the castle now, and it'll be safe. As it's light, we can look after it.
I see the other one now, Deerslayer. Look, just up the lake there, and drifting slowly into shore.
I see it. Let me help you with the paddle. It isn't moving with the natural current of the wind, though. I can't account for that.
Did you leave a paddle in it?
No. All the paddles except the ones we are using are at the Ark. I took them with me when we found the boats last night and set them adrift. Why?
I'm sure there's something in motion on the other side of that canoe.
I believe you're right.
What can it be?
I have it, gal. There's an Indian in that boat. He's lying in it and paddling toward the shore with his arm. We must overtake him before he gets into land.
Be careful, Deerslayer. He may be armed.
Not likely, gal. He swam to the boat while we were just occupied and is trying to get it back in this method.
He's heard us. Look, he's on his knees now. Take your rifle.
I won't need it. Here, Redskin. If you've enjoyed yourself enough in that canoe, take to the lake again. I don't crave your blood. Take to the lake again before we get to hot words. I thought as much. He's off to the shore, Judith. But he'll have his rifle in a few minutes. Here, take a hold of his canoe and I'll put us beyond his rifle. We've got the boats now, and we'll join Hetty at the castle.
Well, here we are, Hetty. We have all the canoes at the Ark now, and we're safe for the present.
Did you see anything, your father?
No, we have no chance for that.
Do you suppose he and Harry will find a way of escape?
It isn't likely, Hetty. But when Chingachgook comes tonight, we'll make some plans for their release.
Well, what can two men do against a whole band of Indians on the warpath? I'll go ashore and tell them to let Father and Harry go.
The Indians may do you no harm, Hetty, but they'll hardly listen to any such proposal as that.
Tell me something about your father, Judith. Harry tells me he was once a sailor.
If Harry knows anything of Father's history, I wish he'd told it to me. Sometimes I think he was a sailor, and sometimes I think not.
Has he nothing among his belongings that would tell about his past?
I've never seen anything. But if that chest of his was open, or could speak, we could find out something, I'm sure.
A chest?
Yes, he has a large chest in his room, fastened with heavy iron bars and three locks.
Did you ever see the chest open, Jude?
No, never. Father never opens it in my presence, if he ever opens it at all. No one here has ever seen its lid raised.
You're wrong, Jude. Father has raised the lid, and I've seen him do it.
When and where did you ever see that chest open, Hetty?
Here, and many times. Father opens it when you're away. He doesn't mind my being near and hearing what he says and watching what he does.
Well, what is it he does and what is it he says?
Well, that I can't tell you, Judith. Father's secrets are not my secrets.
This is strange, Deerslayer, that Father should tell them to Hetty and not tell them to me.
There's good reason for that, Judith, though you're not to know it. Father's not here to answer for himself, and I'll say no more about it.
Can I see the chest, Judith?
It's right next to us here in Father's room. It's fastened, though, and he keeps the key hidden.
You mustn't disturb it, Judith. You mustn't.
Father's in danger. He may never come back, and the chest may give us information that will tell us more about who we are. It may have something that we could use for ransom.
No, no. I tell you, Father wouldn't want you to open it. It'll do us no good. Don't, Judith. Leave it alone, please.
Here's the box, Deerslayer. It's fastened with this padlock and these iron plates. Do you know where he keeps the key, Hetty?
He's never shown me that. I think he keeps it with him. Please, Judith, let's leave it alone. You'll be sorry.
Let's look for the key, Deerslayer. It's probably hidden somewhere in this room because Father wouldn't run the risk of carrying it. He knows it would be safer here. You look along that wall, and I'll look over here under these clothes. Hetty's just superstitious.
Did your father ever give any downright command concerning this chest, Judith?
No. He's always appeared to think that its lock and steel bands are its best protection.
It is a rare chest, anyway. Why, this wood comes from no forest I know of. The chest itself would buy your father's ransom.
He seems to prize what the box holds more than the box itself.
Well, I don't like to pry into another man's affairs. But if the chest has articles for your father's freedom, it seems to me they would be wisely used in redeeming their owner's life.
But it doesn't belong to you, Deerslayer, or to Judith. You have no right to molest it.
When the lawful owner of a buck or a trap or a canoe isn't present, his next of kin becomes his representative by all the laws of the woods, Hetty. Being the oldest, Judith, you have the right to say, in my opinion.
When my father's life is in danger, I can't hesitate. I say we'll open it if we find the key. I've been looking for it here on this wall. You take a look for it in those drawers over there, Deerslayer. Don't stand there staring at us, Hetty. Help us search.
I'll not help. And I hope you don't find the key. It's sinful.
But it's for Father's sake. You love him, don't you?
More than you, Judith Hutter. I love him so much I'll not disobey him. I know he'd not have you do this.
Well, the key's not here, Deerslayer. Let's look in this room next, which belongs to me and Hetty.
I won't stay with you. And I tell you again, you'll be sorry if you do this evil thing. You'll be sorry.
So this room belongs to you and Hetty?
Yes.
It would not be hard to tell which side belongs to you, gal. You love finery, they say. And I guess these handsome garments don't belong to the meek and lowly Hetty Hutter.
Oh, that's just another evidence of Hetty's weak mind, that she thinks fine clothes are frivolous and sinful. Oh, don't waste any time looking among her things, Deerslayer. Nothing we seek would likely be found there.
Your father trusts her, as she said. I reckon it'd be the most narrow thing for him to hide the key among her clothes, if it's in this room at all. Look in that coarse pocket there.
Deerslayer, it's the key. It's the one, I'm sure. Come, quickly. It is the key. Oh, there. Oh, Deerslayer. Perhaps Hetty's right. Maybe we should find some other means of releasing Father and hurry.
Not so, gal. No means are as easy and certain as a good bribe. The lid'll open all right. It's loaded with iron and held by its own weight. Here, let me try it. Here's a full cargo. Bring some stools while I open this blanket on the floor and we'll begin our work orderly and in comfort. Well, the first thing looks like a king's garment.
A man's coat. Oh, what beautiful ornaments. All red and gold. Is it a military coat?
It's like none I ever saw, though it may be. But it's an extraordinary thing. I think this will do, Judith. No Indian heart could withstand colors and glitter like this. If this coat was ever made for your father, you've come honestly by your taste for finery.
That coat was never made for Father. It's much too long. Father's short and square.
Cloth was plenty if it was, and glitter cheap.
I should like to see it on your shoulders, Deerslayer.
What? See me in a coat fit for a lord? If you wait till that day, Judith, you'll wait until you see me beyond reason and memory. No, no, gal, my gifts are my gifts, and I'll live and die in them, though I never bring down another deer. What have I done that you wish to see me in such a flaunting coat?
Because I think the false-tongued young gallants at the garrison ought not to be the only ones to appear in fine feathers. I think truth and honesty should be honored.
What honor to me, to be bedizened and beskulleted like a Mingo? No, I'm well as I am. Lay the coat on the blanket, and we'll look further in the chest. Here's something for you.
Oh, a dress. A brocade. Oh, how beautiful. Look, Deerslayer. It's just my size, too. Look.
I don't know a better way to treat with a Mingo's gal than to send you ashore in that and tell him a queen has arrived among them.
Oh, I thought your tongue too honest to flatter. I've respected you because I thought you truthful.
'Tis solemn truth, Judith. Never did eyes of mine gaze on such a glorious creature as you, standing there with that dress falling from your shoulders.
Well, of what use could a dress like this be to an Indian woman? She couldn't wear it among the branches of the trees.
I think this is all we'll need now to trade with the Redskins. Maybe we shouldn't explore further in the chest.
But we might find something even more valuable to trade for ransom. Let's take everything out. Look! Pistols! Inlaid with silver. Did you ever see arms like these, Deerslayer?
I saw an officer at the fort once who had just come from Europe who carried a pair like them. Here, let me see them, gal.
Are they loaded?
White men are careless in putting away firearms in chists and corners. Let me open the pan and see. Yes, it's filled with priming, but it's been here so long it's caked like a bit of cinder. But this gun's a handsome thing to look at, though. Child guns, the Delawares call these pistols.
I can tell by your eyes, Deerslayer, that you'd like to be trying them. I can see that they're a challenge to your marksmanship. Is it safe to fire a pistol that's been loaded so long?
It's very neglectful to leave a piece loaded so long. It takes fresh priming to ensure a proper discharge. Well, there's scarce a season goes by, but someone in the settlements don't suffer from one of these forgotten charges.
What do you mean?
Why, the pistol hangs fire as it's timed. And I have known weapons to break into fragments when,
The Deerslayer, Part 5 of 13, on Tuned to Yesterday from 1932. This is an hour of series on Tuned to Yesterday. We continue the story now with Part 6.
Judith Hutter have been successful in their search for the lost canoes and have brought them back to the castle, although they encountered dangerous and thrilling experiences in effecting their rescue from the Indians. They are now at the log house in the middle of the lake, where they are discussing methods of obtaining the release of old Tom Hutter and Hurry Harry March, who have fallen into Iroquois hands. Judith tells Deerslayer of an old chest that belongs to her father, and they decide to open it and discover, if possible, the means of paying a ransom. The chest is locked, and Hetty alone knows where to find the key. She refuses to help him, saying that it is against her father's wishes and that some danger lurks within, and they will be sorry if they proceed any further. However, they pay no attention to her, find the key, open the chest, and begin to explore its contents. They find some richly embroidered clothes and a pair of silver-mounted pistols. Deerslayer is handling one of these weapons when the air is torn with a violent explosion, and they hear Hetty scream in terror.
Hetty, what's wrong?
Are you hurt? Oh, Judy, I told you not to open that chest. What was that shot? Where's Deerslayer? Oh, I know something dreadful has happened.
We found the pair of old silver pistols, and Deerslayer fired one by accident, but we're both safe.
It's all over. There was an narrow escape. The plyman was old and caked, and the pistol burst into 100 pieces when I was careless enough to let the hammer fall. But no harm was done.
It seems miraculous that a pistol should burst in your hand and you escape without serious accident.
Such wonders aren't uncommon at all among worn-out arms. The first rifle they ever gave me played the same trick. Thomas Hutter is master of one pistol less than he was yesterday. But as it happened in trying to serve him, there's no ground for complaint, I guess.
We've done right in opening the chest, Hetty, because we've found enough already to offer 12 ransoms for Father. And we're not to the bottom yet. Oh, come with us this time. The mischief's done, and you've had no part in it. Oh, that's right. Come see the lovely dress we found.
I have seen it.
Sit down here and watch. We're almost through. What's the next article, Deerslayer?
I don't know what it is, gal. Some unusual instrument, all done up with brass ornaments.
It looks like the surveyor's tools I've seen.
No, I've seen all their implements. But none of them look like this. Was your father ever a surveyor, Judith?
No, he's no surveyor, Deerslayer. That instrument goes far beyond his learning.
Then he's fallen heir to another man's goods. What have we here in this bag? This is something new to my eyes.
Little pieces of ivory. Heads of men. Knights on horses. And little castles on elephants.
Judith, did your parents ever talk to you of religion?
My mother did, often. My father, never.
That I can believe. That I can believe. He has no God. No such God as it becomes a white man to worship, or even a redskin. Them things are idols.
Oh, Deerslayer, do you really think these ivory toys are Father's gods?
Yes, them are idols. Why should your father keep them if he doesn't worship them?
Would he keep his gods in a bag and locked up in a closet? No. My father carries his gods with him wherever he goes, and that's in his own cravings. I think these came from some distant country and fell into his hands when he was a sailor.
I'm downright glad to hear it, Judith. But I don't think I could keep a white idolater out of his difficulties. What do you call this? An elephant?
Yes, it's an elephant. I've often seen pictures of such animals at the garrison. And Mother had a book in which there was a printed account of the creatures.
Well, elephant or no elephant, 'tis an idol. And not fit to remain in Christian keep.
Oh, they may not be idols, Deerslayer. Oh, I know. I remember I've seen one of the officers at the garrison with a set of fox and geese made in this same design. They use them in playing some kind of game. What's this, wrapped in cotton? Maybe it belongs to your idol.
Now, let me see. It's a board with a piece of ivory built into it. I think...
Now I'm sure that these queer figures belong to a game of some sort.
I'm not convinced, Judith. But of one thing I'm certain. One of these elephants, as you call them, would buy a whole tribe of Iroquois. You need have no fear for your father now. His ransom is settled.
Well, when can we visit the tribe and make an exchange?
Tonight at sunset, we'll meet my friend, the Delaware chief, at the Big Rock, as we agreed. He'll advise us how we should best make offers to our enemies. I feel the need of sleep, girl. But half an hour before sunset, we start in the Ark to keep the rendezvous with our friend. You keep a lookout on the lake, and call me if you see any sign of our enemies having taken to the water.
Deerslayer, it's time to meet your friend now.
I'm ready, Judith. I've decided, gal, to go alone in one of the canoes.
It'll be a hazardous journey, and you shouldn't risk your life in the venture.
I've been thinking too, my friend, and I think you should take the Ark, because it's quite safe from the enemy's rifles. And in that case, I'll go along, because I know how to use firearms, and I can be of service if you're attacked. You can do the rowing, and I'll stand guard when your friend Chingachgook makes his jump from the rock to the boat.
What about Hetty?
Oh, I've discussed the matter with her, and she insists on staying here at the castle. She's been very sullen all day because we insisted on opening that chest. She seems to be making some plan of her own, but I can't tell what it is.
But the varmints will see us when we leave here. And if they've been building a raft, they'll make an attempt to occupy this castle in our absence. Hetty will not be able to keep them out.
Oh, she can lock herself up here. Anyway, as I've explained to you, the Indians believe that Hetty is feeble-minded, as she is, poor child. They'll not harm her. In fact, she'll be safer here than with us on the Ark. Well, it's time to leave, Deerslayer. Are you ready?
I'm not convinced you're right, Judith. Though the cabin on the Ark is built of good stout logs. And if we can rescue the chief, the two of us can stand off the enemy a long time unless they swamp us before we get off the shore. I guess we'll try it.
You bring the canoes inside the palisades and padlock them in, and I'll fasten these doors and windows.
Judith, if your father was ever on the sea, it's likely that he has a spyglass around here. Have you ever seen one?
Oh, yes. We use it all the time. It's on those high brackets in the corner of his room. I'll get it.
Deerslayer.
Hello, Hetty. Are you over your fright now?
Deerslayer, do you think if I went ashore and told the Indians it was unchristian to hold Father, they'd let him go?
No, Hetty. The Redskins can't understand such doctrines. You stay here with the castle until we bring off my friend. And tomorrow we'll try to bring them to their senses with the ransom things we found in the chest.
Do you see this little book, Deerslayer? It's a Bible. It belonged to Mother. She taught me to read it. I'll take this to the Indians and tell them that there's a God who rules over the whole earth and is a ruler of all men, red or white.
Oh, I understand a little now what they mean who have told me about your reasoning powers, Gal. I've seen too much of these natives in my life to know the reception of that kind of preaching.
I've often gone among the Indians, Deerslayer, and have preached to them, too. They never harmed me.
They were not on the warpath then, or it would have been different. I know they'll not harm you yourself, but they won't listen to anything you can say about releasing their captives. No, you leave that to me and Chingachgook.
Here's the spyglass, Deerslayer. Well, does Hetty still insist on staying here?
I'll stay here. I've much to think about, and I can't help you on the water.
Judith and I will cast off then in the Ark, Hetty. You'd better keep a lookout through these little windows that look so much like portholes. If all holds well, we should be back an hour after dark. Keep your glass on the shore, gal. They're probably preparing a raft. Can you see anything?
No, Deerslayer. I've studied the shore inch for inch, and I see nothing yet. But why are you heading the scow in all manner of directions?
I'm trying to baffle the varmints. They're no doubt watching us, but I'll make them leg weary tramping after us. And at the last minute, I'll swing back to the rock.
Well, must we reach the rock exactly at the moment the sun sets?
Precisely.
Well, a few moments sooner or later won't matter, though, will it?
Yes, it will. The rock's within point blank distance for a gun. It won't do to hover too close or too long. Do you see any sign of the enemy yet?
No, everything is quiet. I can't see a motion. But it's getting gloomy along the banks now, and we're not far from the rock. Why are you heading east again? The rock is almost due south.
As I told you, to get the savages tramping off in the wrong direction.
You really think they're watching our movements?
Certainly.
All I was in hopes they'd fallen back into the woods and left us to ourselves for a few hours.
That's altogether a woman's conceit. There's no let up in an Indian's watchfulness when he's on the warpath. His eyes are on us this minute. Our only hope is to get them off on a wrong scent. The Mingos have good noses, but a white man's reason ought to equalize their instinct. Now we'll head in. Keep your eyes alert.
Oh, I like the way you make decisions, Deerslayer. You make me confident that we'll succeed.
Was your father ever in the hands of the Iroquois before?
Yes, once, but a few skins easily released him.
Well, it won't be so easy this time. I'll take the sail down now and we'll float in close. Stand at the loophole there on the side next to the shore. And give me warning if anyone approaches. We must be close in now, Judith. Can you see the rock?
Yes.
Is it empty?
Can you see the Delaware chief yet?
No, Deerslayer. Neither rocks, shore, nor trees seem to have ever held a human being.
Keep close, Judith. Keep close. A rifle has a prying eye, a nimble foot, and a desperate, fatal tongue. Keep close, but be on the alert.
And you, Deerslayer, do you keep close? Don't let the savages get a glimpse of you. A bullet would be as fatal to you as to me.
No fear of me, gal. No fear of me. Don't look this way. Keep your eyes on the rock. What is it? What is it, Judith?
There's a man on the rock. An Indian warrior in his paint and armed.
Where does he wear his hawk's feather? Is it fast to the warlock? Or does he carry it above the left ear?
Above the left ear. He smiles, too, and mutters the word Mohican.
God be praised to the serpent at last.
He's getting ready to jump in the ark, dear Slayer. Here he comes.
Serpent, come. Dear Slayer, on time.
Welcome, serpent. You're here in the nick of time.
Pull, dear Slayer. Pull for life and death. The lake is full of savages waiting after us.
Help me get this craft underway, Chief. Once in motion, we can fight off an army.
Pull, dear Slayer. For heaven's sake. They're swimming to the ark. They're coming after us. They'll seize the ark.
The Deerslayer, on Tuned to Yesterday, a broadcast first heard in 1932. You're listening to an hour of series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Now time to pick up on the George Edwards Players production of Frankenstein, broadcast way back in 1931. This is part 5 of 13.
Present George Edwards in Frankenstein. Baron Frankenstein is taking shelter in the good ship Voyager, where he is the guest of Captain Walton. While the Voyager was icebound, Frankenstein told the captain some of his tragic story. He told of the creation of the monster, of its escape and return.
I trust that you had a refreshing sleep, Baron Frankenstein. You certainly look much better this morning.
Thank you, Captain. I slept very well, and I feel that my strength is gradually returning.
I am glad to hear that. Do you feel inclined to tell me some more of your story?
Well, I remember telling you how the monster had returned. He had learned to speak, and he begged me to make him a mate.
Yes. One cannot help feeling a little sorry for him. I know what it is to be bitterly lonely.
I also know. But the monster rushed out of the house when I refused. My wife and I discussed the matter. I sent for the burgomaster and begged that his officers would look for the monster. Some little time later, the storm burst in all its fury. The rain came down in torrents, and the thunder roared. My wife approached me anxiously.
Victor, do you know that Justine has not brought little William home yet?
I had almost forgotten about them, Elizabeth. Are you sure they have not come home?
I have searched the house. I have asked the other servants, and they have seen no sign of them.
Dear, this is most disturbing. You instructed the woman to come home before the storm burst.
They have been out for a long time. Do you think we should go and look for them?
Well, they only went to the edge of the lake. Surely they cannot be far away.
I am worried, Victor. You know the monster is loose out there. Suppose that he were to attack William or Justine.
Oh, there is no fear of that. Undoubtedly, Justine and William are taking shelter somewhere.
I hope that you are right. Victor, see, you have returned. Where is William? How can I tell you? Victor, there is William. I took him to the lake. And I was playing with him there. He ran away from me. He went into the woods. It took a long time to find him, but I failed. I called his name time and time again, but there was no reply. Then the storm burst. I became panic-stricken. I have been out in the rain searching for him. I fear that he may have fallen into the lake. Victor, you must go at once. Find the burgomaster and his men. Tell them to forget about the monster. They must find William.
I will go now. Have hope and courage, Elizabeth. I am sure that I will find William somewhere.
Madam, how can I ask your forgiveness? I swear that I meant no harm to come to the child. You should have stayed with him, Justine. If any harm has come to me, I will never forgive myself. Well, go and change your clothes. You are wet through, and then come down here.
We will wait patiently for Baron Frankenstein's return. Ah, Victor, you have not gone yet.
I am taking some of the servants with me. I have left word. Here, Dr. the Burgomaster and his men return. They are to look for William. Wait for me, Elizabeth. I will return as soon as possible.
Well, Baron Frankenstein, did you succeed in finding the child?
Well, for 2 hours I searched, taking my faithful servants with me. We wandered through the woods, calling the child's name, but there was no reply. At last, somewhat dispirited, I returned home to find my wife and Justine waiting for me as soon as I entered.
Victor, is there any news? Did you see any sign of William?
Not a sign.
He must have fallen into the lake, and it was my fault. Victor, I am distracted. What can have become of William?
I do not know, my dear. Did the Burgomaster return?
He has not been back yet. The storm is abating.
Yeah, it is passing. We will continue our search all through the night.
Listen. I hear men's voices.
So the Burgomaster is returning. Bring him in here, Justine.
As you command, Baron Frankenstein.
Oh, I blame myself for this in a way. Victor, we should never have allowed Justine to take William out today.
She should have taken better care of him. She should never have allowed him to stay out of her sight.
What is that?
A woman screamed.
Victor, what can it mean?
Burgomaster, what has happened? Who screamed?
I am sorry to tell you, Baron Frankenstein, that a tragedy has occurred. My men have found the body of the child, William.
William? He's dead?
Yeah, the girl Justine saw his body when we were carrying it in. My men are holding her.
Elizabeth, I do not know what to say to you.
Burgomaster, tell us what has happened.
I only know that we were searching for this monster of whom Baron Frankenstein spoke. During the course of our search, we looked through some rushes on the edge of the lake, and there we found the body of the boy, William.
Oh.
He was lying face downward in shallow water, and he was dead when we found him.
Did you send for a doctor?
Yeah, we did. But the doctor could not have helped in this case, Baron Frankenstein.
Do you think the boy tripped and fell into the water?
I think that he was pushed into the water. And I think Justine was responsible for the crime.
Oh, no. You must not say that.
You have been away, both of you. But it is common talk here that Justine disliked the boy. She was always scolding him. And she told people that he was a difficult child. And we think that in a fit of rage, she pushed him into the water.
Oh, I do not think that is possible.
Well, let us have the girl in here and question her now.
But my wife is grief-stricken. She need not remain here.
Let me go and look about the body of William. I will send Justine to you.
Very well, my dear. But do not distress yourself. Please go to your room and rest.
I feel that I shall never be able to rest peacefully again.
I will wait here with the Burgomaster. Tell them to bring Justine in here.
Very well, my dear.
I know this is most distressing for you, Baron Frankenstein. But I have my duty to do. And if my suspicions are correct, then Justine will be arrested.
Tell me this. Did you see any sign of the monster? Any huge footprints?
No, we did not. The rain was coming down in torrents. No footprints would be left. Oh, bring Justine in here.
Why have these men seized me? I have committed no crime.
Hear me, girl. Is it not so that you were always scolding the child?
He was a wayward child, and as he was in my charge, I had to correct his fault.
You are a woman of unbridled temper, and at times you have been known to strike the child.
Why, this is news to me, Burgomaster.
She has been seen to strike the child.
That is not true.
That is true. Will you admit that at times you have struck him?
Yes, I have struck him, but merely because he deserved it.
You had no right to do that.
Hear me, Justine. Is it not true that in a fit of rage, you pushed the child into the lake?
That is untrue. I swear I did not push him into the lake. He ran away from me. He went into the woods, and I could not find him. You must believe me.
No, we do not believe you.
Baron Frankenstein, you know I would not kill the child.
Address your remarks to me, Justine. Is it not true that in a fit of rage, you pushed the child into the lake, and then you were afraid of your mad act? You wandered around in the rain for hours and pretended you were looking for him.
It is not true.
Did you quarrel with him today?
I was angry with him for running away from me. And I said I would slap him if I caught him.
You terrified the child.
I did not kill him.
I am going to arrest you and charge you with the murder. You will stand your trial in due time.
Baron Frankenstein, I appeal to you. I swear that the child came to no harm at my hands. I have served your family faithfully and well these many years. I did not murder William. You cannot believe it of me. I beg that you do not allow him to arrest me.
Burgomaster, I think you are being rather hasty. I cannot believe that Justine pushed the child into the lake.
It is my duty to arrest criminals. and I suspect her of having committed the murder.
You are a stupid man. There is no proof that I did it.
We will find proof.
What has happened?
Oh, Elizabeth, you have returned.
I felt I wanted to know what was happening here. And I thought that you should go and look on the body of William.
Justine has been arrested. The burgomaster thinks that she killed William.
Father, save me. Do not let them arrest me. I did not kill the child. You believe me. You must believe me.
Burgomaster, why do you say that Justine killed the child?
Who else would have done it?
Wait here. I wish to go and look on the body of the child. Do not take Justine away until I speak with you again.
Very well. We will wait for you, Baron Frankenstein.
I will return in a few minutes.
Now, Justine, it will be better for you if you tell the truth. If you confess, then there may be a chance of saving your life. But if you persist in your denial and the court finds you guilty, then you will surely die.
But I am not guilty. And I know the Baroness does not believe that I am guilty.
Perhaps the Baroness is not aware that at times you struck the child.
Is that true, Justine? I had to correct his fault. Never at any time did I strike him hard.
Oh, you had no right to strike him.
I go to my knees before you, Baroness. I swear I am innocent of this charge. Please help me.
Enough of that, Justine. You shall receive a fair trial. But I am convinced that you are guilty.
Wait, Burgomaster. This girl is not to be taken from the house.
What ails you, Baron Frankenstein?
She did not murder the child.
What? How do you know?
Did you not observe the marks upon the child's throat? He was strangled. The marks were the same as those upon the throat of my poor servant, Julio. I am in reality the murderer of that child.
The murderer?
Baron Frankenstein, what tragedy you have faced.
Well, even now, when I think of it, I feel that I loathe that devil. But I cannot die yet.
Will you tell me some more of the story?
Not now. Let me just rest for a while. Come to me later, and you shall hear further details of my tragic life.
Frankenstein, untuned to yesterday, part 5 of 13, brought to us by the George Edwards Players and recorded for broadcast in 1931. During the 1930s through the 1950s on Australian radio, George Edwards was one of the most popular and revered voices on radio, known to some as the Man with a Thousand Voices. Now time for part 6 of 13 of his production of Frankenstein.
Present George Edwards in Frankenstein. Baron Frankenstein passed away the tedious days on the good ship Voyager by relating his tragic experiences to Captain Walton. The Voyager was icebound somewhere near the North Pole, and day after day a howling blizzard raged. Captain Walton became worried, and the ice pack grew higher. He confided his worry to Baron Frankenstein.
You look rather worried today, Captain Walton.
Unfortunately, the weather shows no signs of abating, Baron Frankenstein.
Have any of your men seen any trace of the monster? Has he attempted to visit the ship again?
No one has seen any trace of it. Let us hope it has perished out there in the blizzard.
I hope so, but I very much doubt it.
Do you feel inclined to tell me some more of your story?
Well, I have told you how the child, William, was murdered. And on examining the body, I formed the conclusion that the murder had been committed by the monster. I dashed back into the room where my wife and the burgomaster were waiting with Justine. And I told them that I was in reality responsible for the murder of William. They looked at me in some amazement. And then my wife...
Victor! What are you saying?
It is true, Elizabeth. The monster killed William, and I created the monster. He has done this for revenge because I refused to grant his request.
Do you not agree with me that Justine was guilty of the murder?
I swear that I am not guilty.
You can release Justine. She is innocent. Burgomaster, did I not set you and your men to search for the monster?
The monster which you say you created. Ah, likely story, Baron Frankenstein.
Understand, Burgomaster, that people do not doubt my word. I say that Justine is not guilty of this murder. Take your men. Go and search for this monster. Then you will find the murderer. Had you examined the body closely, you would have seen the marks on the throat.
I am sorry if I have given you offense, Baron Frankenstein. I was merely trying to do my duty.
I appreciate that. Will you go now? Seek until you find this monster. Have no mercy. Shoot him on sight.
We will do that. But of a truth, I have never seen the creature. Is it true that he is your creation? That you made him in a laboratory at the back of this house?
It is true. Now go and do not question me further. Find him and kill him.
Come, you men. There is much work to be done tonight. We will take our leave, Baron Frankenstein.
Baron Frankenstein, I go to my knees and thank you for saving my life. I thank you for making them release me.
All right, Justine. Now go.
Yes. I wish to speak to the Baron, and I do not wish to be disturbed. I will go, and believe me, I will sincerely mourn the child.
What have you to say to me, Elizabeth?
You are a murderer, Victor. You were right when you said you were responsible for William's death. It was through your own obstinacy, your headstrong stubbornness, that the monster was brought into being. Ernst and I pleaded with you. We begged you not to proceed with this experiment. But you turned a deaf ear to our pleas. And as a result, Giulio and William have been murdered. The murder is yours, and it will forever be upon your conscience.
Oh, Elizabeth, please do not turn against me.
Had you heeded me, had you really loved me, you would not have proceeded with your experiment. You would have married me and destroyed the form which you had made. But you were selfish. You wish to win fame. And what is the result? Oh, I think I hate you, Victor.
Oh, Elizabeth, you do not mean that.
Oh, that child's body lies in this house, mutely crying for revenge. And yet you stand here and try to justify yourself.
Oh, what can I say to you, Elizabeth?
Are you going to let that monster live? Are you going to let it roam the countryside, leaving a trail of death and misery? Why are you not out searching for it? Why do you not destroy this evil thing?
Very well, Elizabeth. I admit that I cannot justify myself. I will go now, and I shall not return until I have slain the monster.
No, Victor. I do not mean what I said. If you go out there, the monster may kill you.
You have shown me my duty very plainly, Elizabeth. I will go, and I trust that I will return.
You must not go, Victor. The shock and the grief caused me to speak like that. I do not hate you. I love you and I want you to stay here.
It is because of my love for you I want to repair the great sin which I have committed.
You cannot go. Remember, Ernest Crevel is coming tomorrow.
Tell him what has happened and do not fear for me.
Goodbye. Did you succeed in finding the monster, Baron Frankenstein?
Well, I wandered out into the night. I walked through the woods. I traveled for miles until I was footsore and weary. But still I saw no trace of the being which I had created. And then, just as dawn was breaking, I came to a little clearing at the side of the woods. I looked around curiously, and then eventually I heard a woman sobbing. I hurried in the direction of the sound, and as I came through the woods, I saw a peasant's cottage. Outside the cottage, a woman was kneeling beside the body of a man. She was weeping bitterly. I approached her. Why? What is the matter? Can I do anything to help you?
Who are you? Where have you come from?
My name is Baron Frankenstein. What is the matter with this man?
Oh, he is dead. He has been murdered.
Let me see. Oh, the same marks on the throat.
This man was my husband. We lived here happily together for many years. And one day a strange creature came into the woods.
He seemed to be half man, half beast, always prying throughout indoors, following my husband when he went to his work in the woods. Today, my husband took his gun. He shot at the creature, and the bullet struck him, but it had no effect. The creature advanced. He seized my husband by the throat. I was powerless to interfere, and in a few minutes, Gustav was dead. And then the creature ran into the woods, saying that all men were his enemies.
Leaving a trail of death and misery.
Oh, will you help me, sir? What can I do? I am so afraid.
We will take your husband's body into the house. I will return to town and you shall come with me. It is not safe for you here.
Well, what is this strange creature? Where did he come from? He terrifies me.
Will help me to carry your husband's body down gently now.
Bring it in here.
Come on, Dickley. Here. We shall lay it on the couch.
What can I do? Oh, Gustav, Gustav, my husband.
Take comfort. Although there is little I can say.
Oh, listen.
The monster approaches.
Oh, they are not safe. They shall be killed.
Greetings, Frankenstein. I thought that you would follow me.
I have followed you so that I may kill you. This time I have a gun.
You cannot kill me.
We shall see.
I am wounded, Frankenstein, but I will not die. You are the second man who has tried to kill me today, the second man who has wounded me, who has taught me the meaning of physical pain. Let this woman be gone. We have much to say to each other.
I will go. This creature is a devil. He cannot die.
Poor woman. Why did you kill her husband?
Because he was my enemy. All men are my enemies. And I take that gun from you, Frankenstein.
You devil! You are so strong!
Now we can talk. This woman will not return. She will run to the town for aid. I am the most wretched being on this earth. You are my creator, Frankenstein. And yet you despise and spurn me. You gave me life, a life that is filled with misery and wretchedness. You gave me this hideous form which turns all men against me. Do you expect me to love all men?
Why did you kill the child? Why did you kill this poor peasant?
Because he strove to kill me. Have I not the right to defend myself? Why do men strive to kill me? Why do they shudder when I appear? Is that not your fault, Frankenstein? Have I not suffered enough? Do you not think I have been punished? Everywhere I go, I seek bliss and happiness. But I am excluded because I am a hideous monster. Misery made me a fiend, but it is in your power to make me happy. Then there will be no further death, no further misery. When first you brought me to life, I was a poor, helpless, miserable wretch. I knew and could distinguish nothing, but I could feel pain, and I spent my days in weeping and misery. I will remember one day when I was oppressed with the cold. I was wandering in the woods. I found a fire which had been left by some beggars. I was overcome with delight at the warmth I experienced. I thrust my hand into the embers. I quickly drew it out again with a cry of pain. Thus did I learn the meaning of physical pain. But I have had greater suffering than that, Frankenstein. Wandering in loneliness. And yet you could give me happiness. I watched this couple, whom you call peasants. They were happy. They loved each other. A love which I could never know. I wished to be friendly with them, but they fled from me. Viewed me with hatred and loathing. The man strove to kill me. Then he died.
Tell me, foul monster, why did you slay the child, William?
Because he meant something to you. Because I wanted you to suffer as I have suffered. And I swear this, Frankenstein, if you do not give me a mate, then you shall have no mate. I shall slay your wife.
You dare to threaten to kill my wife?
I swear that unless you start work very soon, unless you commence to create another creature, then your wife shall die.
What happened, Baron Frankenstein? Did you agree to the conditions imposed by the monster?
Oh, I can tell you no more today, Captain Walton. The memory of those horrors is still too fresh upon my mind. Return later, and I will continue with my story.
Frankenstein, part 6 of 13 on Tuned 2 yesterday, from 1932. And that brings to a close this hour of continuing stories on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to join us next week at the very same time as we pick up on these classic tales. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBounier. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.